Hey, welcome back. It's Friday, and I always enjoy this for years and years and years. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joins us. Mike, as I say good morning to you, because I've been gone a lot here in recent weeks, but we got so much stuff going on. It's not just with the teams. I do want to start with this one. If you were a coach, would you play your starters in preseason, or would you just give it off and just do joint practices?
Well, first of all, fans of all 32 NFL franchises should be very glad that I'm not a coach. But if I were, I would want my players to be ready for the regular season. So I would at least want them to have one opportunity to go out there with their uniforms on, to go through the motions before a game, to go out and just feel it again. No matter how long you've played, no matter how long you've been in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, for example, I don't care that he's been in the NFL 20 years. He's never played for the Steelers before. That's a new thing. And he's going to be doing that for the first time at MetLife Stadium, where he's facing his most recent former team. He's never faced a former team before. It's too much. Let's have a preseason game where he goes out there and just gets himself ready for what's coming. I would want to get my guys ready for what's coming, and I'd have to be willing to ignore any and all noise coming from the fact that one of my guys might get injured while we're playing in one of these preseason games.
I kind of disagree with you, Mike, because I'm now a veteran of watching these joint practices, and it's more of a controlled environment. And, you know, usually people don't get taken to the ground unless you're playing the Chicago Bears. But I will say there are more fights in joint practices. They might average three fights per joint practice, every joint practice. Yesterday, the Packers, Zach Tom got kicked out of a joint practice. Is there a way that you can control these fights, or are they a good thing?
Well, the coaches say it's not a good thing. I think at one level, they think it's a good thing because they want to see that fire from their players. And they say, well, you've got to be able to control yourself because in a game, you're going to get ejected and we're going to be penalized. Well, okay, that's fine. We'll worry about that when a game rolls around. In a joint practice, there's no downside. There's no penalty. At worst, you're getting kicked out of the joint practice. Who doesn't want to be kicked out of practice? I think the solution to this, if they truly cared about it, and I made this case after Aaron Donald took a Cincinnati Bengals helmet 3 years ago and smashed another player over the head with it. The NFL needs to exercise jurisdiction over joint practices. The NFL's position is that's up to the teams. Well, when Aaron Donald does what he did, and it's up to Sean McVay, the coach of the Rams, to do something about it, what's Sean McVay going to do? Hey, Aaron, can you not do that next time, please? Please, just don't do that. Don't do that again. You're not going to get a real punishment. The moment the NFL starts meting out the same punishments for these acts of violence, extracurricular to the game, in joint practice that they do during games, that's when it stops. So I think the fair conclusion is the NFL doesn't care. And maybe the NFL doesn't care. Maybe this is a little of the Jerry Jones dynamic, man. Maybe the NFL doesn't care because it makes news. And we talk about the NFL in the aftermath of these fights at joint practices.
Well, I tell you what, it is true. It doesn't seem to matter. Hell, we're already talking about the final cuts getting ready and who's going to make it and who's not. And they're doing that in 32 different locations right now. But I do want to ask you about Jerry Jones. Goes on the Michael Irvin show and says, hey, I got something worked out. I told his agent, it's all worked out, man. And the agent, like, I don't blame the agent. I guess he's not always the most popular guy. I don't blame the agent for being a little pissed that you're working around me with trying to get a deal done with my client. How do you feel about the whole thing and the way Jerry Jones is handling this?
Well, and it's been a weird week because on one hand, I've been fascinated and riveted by the Netflix documentary series about the Cowboys. And I think that it's because Jerry Jones has found this sweet spot where he is in equal parts magnetic and repugnant. And I can't not watch that show. But he's very repugnant in one key respect. And I'm going to bang this drum as hard as I can with the league and with the union. I'm going to email both of them today and ask them the direct question. Why do they let him negotiate directly with players? It's a CBA violation. You can't go negotiate a contract with a player. He wants to take the deal that he believes he negotiated directly with Michael Parsons in March, reduce it to writing, and sign it. And the agent is basically like a courtroom stenographer who is writing it up or just signing it without regard to whether or not the agent had any involvement in the negotiation. And I know Dez Bryant said something like this to Jerry years ago when Jerry was trying to negotiate directly with him. Hey, Jerry, let's go out and run pass routes and you try to defend me. I mean, if you want me to do the thing that you're an expert in, let's go do the thing that I'm an expert in.
Mike, I have a little bit of feeling of discomfort when it comes to this situation because David Magetta happens to be the most powerful black agent in the game. And when you see these owners conduct themselves and try to do business with him the way they wouldn't try to do it with others, it just makes me uncomfortable. Like, who does Jerry Jones think he is negotiating a contract directly with a player? Would any other agent have tolerated that?
Well, Omar, I think you're hitting a very great point. Michael Hawley and I spent a lot of time talking about the power dynamics today. Yeah. And really, at the end of the day, look, I'm no sociologist, but I think so much of the misconduct that happens in society is rooted in power. Power, who has it, who doesn't, who's trying to keep it, and who wants to remind the people who don't have it that they don't have it. And I feel like the through line for so many of these owners, the vast majority of whom are white and men and old, they want everyone to know we're in charge. All these negotiations, Bengals, the Bengals are cheap. Yeah, they're cheap. That's fine. They also want the players to know who's the boss. And it doesn't matter if it's a white player or a black player. They're doing it to Trey Hendrickson right now. This is about power. And I think that is the bottom line. But I can understand why you'd be uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable. I don't like this look for the NFL. I think it's embarrassing to the NFL to have an owner who thinks he is going to go directly to the player and get him to agree to a contract and sign that contract with his agent being anything other than a bystander. It's offensive. It is not the way it's supposed to go. And it throws the power dynamic completely out of whack. And Jerry is brazen about it. You know, whatever we are in our life, once we hit 80, we're only going to get worse. He's getting worse.
Yes, he is. He absolutely is.
I thought he maybe saw what his franchise was worth now, and he just got a little more excited as the value of that thing continues to be the most expensive franchise in professional sports anywhere in the world. Hey, Mike, I did want to ask you about this Cleveland thing, the four quarterback, Shedeur Sanders. We know Joe Flacco's going to start. Now we're trying to figure out, are they going to keep four quarterbacks? Who's going to be the backup? And then on top of that, Eric Dickerson, I think I couldn't disagree more, but maybe you do. He said he was told that teams were told not to draft Shedeur Sanders, which I don't understand. I understand we blame the owners for a lot of stuff. He said he got it from a real reliable source. Where's your take, first of all, on Eric Dickerson, who just kind of added to the mess in Cleveland?
Well, I haven't written about it yet, but I've been thinking about it. And let me try to, and I haven't even talked about it yet. So let me try to explain why there is some plausibility in what Eric Dickerson is saying. And of course, if any team is going to defy the league, it's the Browns, because they did it with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, good point. Good
3 point. Years ago.
Yeah.
And it sparked the whole collusion case that the NFL and the NFLPA inexplicably hid, especially the union. That's shameful that they hid that thing, because that was a weapon that could have been used against the NFL to regain power for the players. But I could see, and I don't know whether or not this is accurate, but I could see the league's attitude towards Shedeur Sanders, because I was told after the draft, because I didn't want to get into any of the pre-draft stuff, because I don't want to help fuel a guy's drop and perpetuate the bull crap that the teams are trying to put out there about a guy so they can draft him a few rounds later than they otherwise would have. But, I was told after the dust settled, the perception was that Shedeur was behaving as if he was being recruited, not as if he was being interviewed, okay? The NFL doesn't want anyone to step out of line. Go back to Colin Kaepernick. They don't want anyone to make the other cyborgs realize that they have power. And if Shedeur Sanders pushes back against the system and it works out for him, maybe other players are going to push back against the system. And they have turned this draft into a massive Harry Potter sorting hat ritual, and they don't like it when people push back. And so if Shedeur Sanders is going to act like anything other than the groveling, please, sir, may I have a job that they want them to be, I could see why the NFL would be upset. I could see it, because they don't want this to spread. They want everyone to say it's an honor and a privilege. Chris Sims and I argue about this every year as the draft approaches, because he's in the honor and a privilege camp, and I am in a, it's an honor and a privilege to be able to go tell a kid who may not even want to visit your city, much less live there, this is where you're going to come work for the next 4, 5, or 6 years. That's the honor and the privilege, but they brainwashed everyone. So to try to land this plane, which may already have crashed, I could see the league doing it. And I don't know whether it happened, but I could see it, because Shedeur Sanders was rebelling against the sorting hat ritual.
He flat out said he didn't want to play for the Cleveland Browns, the team that actually drafted him in the fifth round.
I just go back at you guys, and this league is desperate to find good quarterbacks, black, white, big personalities, quiet guys. We've had them all from Utah to California, laid back to religious. We had them all.
Well, then, and if they can play another job, I mean, yeah. I hate to dredge that up because it's 9 years old.
No,
but why didn't he ever get another job? He played quarterback at a high level. Ron Jaworski was ready to call him one of the greats of all time, potentially the greatest of all time. And 3 years later, he's out of a job. I mean, there's a caveat, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want to win. There's a caveat, though. They want the power. And everyone who doesn't have it is going to be reminded of it from time to time. And if you dare to act like you do when you don't, you're going to get smacked down.
Yeah.
There's no reason why the New Orleans Saints didn't draft Shedeur Sanders, especially considering they still haven't found a quarterback. But we are where we are.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, I appreciate it, man. A lot of good stuff today. And final cuts, and we'll be back at it again with some surprises, and we'll see what happens next week. So thank you so much.
Have a good weekend, guys. Good talking to you.
All right. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joining us this morning. Talk a little bit. Well, we didn't really get into Cleveland four quarterbacks. We got in Shedeur. So you think same thing, huh?
Oh, absolutely. No question.
I just think with Deion, man, Deion was such a big part. I think he's well-respected.
Shedeur was the face of the NIL era of athletes, and the NFL is telling them, you need to get in line. And right now, we're almost at the point where college players might be paid more than a rookie salary if you're not in the first or second round.
Yeah.
So the NFL is putting their foot down. You want to play with us, you get in line. And Shedeur was made an example.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we've got a lot more stuff to get to. Hey, Matt Hayes is going to join us. We come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Jacksonville, and we'll talk a little bit about college football. That's coming up next.